All right, guys, stick with us. We'll be right back with John Hutchinson. Okay, guys, with no further ado, let's bring up our guest, John Hutchinson. He's up in Canada. He's into, as I said, Tesla technology. He's got many different inventions that we'll be talking about, probably a lot more I'm not even aware of. And, you know, again, if you're not familiar with him, just Google his name, Hutchinson, H-U-T-C-H-I-N-S-O-N, Hutchinson. In fact, Google Hutchinson Effect. They actually have a phenomenon that they've named after him, something that he's discovered, and we'll be talking about that, how he's been able to, quote, levitate, and it's pure science. We're not talking about magic here. But literally, you know, anti-gravity, if you will, levitating bowling balls, and go watch the video. It's absolutely fascinating. Anyway, we have him on the line at this time, so let me introduce Mr. Hutchinson. John, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, kind sir. It's a pleasure being on your show.
Yeah, I tell you, for about a year and a half, I guess, I've been fascinated keeping tabs, you know, on some of your findings and, you know, watching your videos, your demonstrations, and... I, for the longest time, I've been trying to get you on. I could never reach you by phone. One day I said, I'll try his email, and bingo. The very same day I heard back from you. I'm like, why didn't I do that in the first place?
Oh, my goodness.
I guess you're a pretty busy guy.
Well, it's this computer. I'm on dial-up. And, of course, it makes the line busy, but I was away for a while, too, in Scottsdale, Arizona, doing some things.
Oh, okay.
So,
well, we're glad...
5 months.
Gotta,
I think is. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, no, I'm glad I finally got a hold of you. Glad I got you on. Before we get into your fascinating scientific discoveries, inventions, whatnot, tell us a little about yourself. You know, how did you get started in this? Just go back to when you were a kid. Have you always had a fascination with science? And I'd be curious to know, you know, how are you getting your funding? Do you have any groups that are helping to fund your research? And.
Well, as a kid, I got involved in this kind of technology and other technologies, too. I was always an avid interest in many, many different things, machine tools, artillery, Navy ships, Tesla, a lot of the old stuff that was long forgotten. So I got involved in replicating a lot of this stuff in the 1970s and continued on until I was discovered by a scientific team that promoted me into the... Actually, it's a military-industrial complex, and then onward into various other adventures with Canadian government, U.S. government, and and after a while, I broke away from that a bit and got into doing this kind of unique demonstrations for news media and private scientists and that. I just finished up this week for Dr. Ludwig from Germany. He was over, I gave him about a week of demonstrations, and I videotaped all of that because what I do with that is I give it to the television people to sell my footage. So, inspired into interest in many different areas in life and machinery and science.
So, do you have any actual degrees, or is just something that you've been into for so long that it's kind of like on-the-job training?
Kind of on-the-job training. I mean, that's basically it. I never made it past grade 8, really.
Wow.
I'm covering book and blocks and have no degrees, and I just have a lot of fun with this stuff. I mean, I worked for the Artificial Reef Society of British Columbia, and I learned about naval engineering for a while.
Well, that's probably why you're so innovative. You know, you haven't been hemmed in by mainstream thinkers, and, you know. I mean, look at Einstein. What, do you have a third-grade education?
I'm not too sure about Sir Albert Einstein. I don't know what his education was, but...
Well, I know his teacher said he would never make it, that he was terrible at math, and...
Goes to show you.
Well, you know, there's also I forget his name now. There's a guy in Germany. You probably heard of him. Actually, no, he's not even autistic, but he's definitely a genius.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a brilliant mathematician. He failed in math as well. His teacher said the same thing about him, and yet now he's over here you know, doing calculations faster than computers. Yeah, he's been on German, on German television. Interestingly, he's got another bizarre talent. He can take a sentence, you just give him a random sentence, and he can say it backwards so perfectly that if you record him and play him in reverse, it sounds like he's saying it forwards.
Oh, awesome. I think I've heard of this gentleman.
Yeah.
Yes, I have.
Pretty fascinating. But again, he's not, quote, edumacated, you know, and he's a genius. So, having an education doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be smart.
No. It actually puts you in a box, and I was working with electrical engineers, and they had to reprogram their thinking back to the ancient times. Well, you know, to Ben Franklin and Tesla and Steinmetz and many other great old-timers that felt their way through this stuff.
Yeah, so obviously you've been a fan of Tesla. You've studied. Have you had access to notes that, you know, the general public hasn't seen? Or, you know, have you been over to Russia at all to look through some of the...
Actually, I have. There was a gentleman up here by the name of Thomas Lee Richardson, who's passed on, who knew Tesla quite well and had a lot of his documentation. He used to talk on radio to Jack Webster's radio show in Vancouver. I met him in the 1980s, and we connected quite well. And I've seen a lot of transcripts and documents that, unfortunately, the provincial government took and sealed them up somewhere, and we could never get access to them because we thought they make excellent for the museum or for other Tesla researchers. So we never could get the documentation. And there was another gentleman from San Francisco. He was a banker, and his great aunt worked for Tesla, and she passed away, and he was on a paper chase to find all these documents and that they were sold off in an auction, and never got to meet him. I talked to him quite a bit, and so I've seen a lot of notes. I've seen a lot of I was on the DOD's SBIR program, still am, and I get a lot of notations or documents with Tesla's name that pops up quite a bit in beam weapon technology and Star Wars, because I was involved in the old Star Wars program. So I had access to a lot of neat stuff like that. So I have a actual big library full of this stuff. I got it in boxes down in the basement, but I was impressed and amazed in what they were doing at that time.
Do you get the impression that there's a lot of his notes that are deliberately being suppressed, like, say, by the Russian government or even our government? Or?
Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
I mean, this stuff's been around a long time. Do you remember the famous Soviet woodpecker?
I've heard of it, but I'm not too familiar with it.
Well, it was a signal being transmitted from Kiev, and it would go into the broadcast bands and interrupt transmissions and was upsetting the ham radio operators. It was a very powerful signal. There's a lot of debate on that in talk and news media back in the 1980s on that particular signal. But again, it's scalar waves and unique things like that that the Soviets were working on way, way back. And the gentleman that sponsored me, Colonel John B. Alexander, he was talking to me about that. 1983, when I was working with him and his team from Los Alamos National Labs, he felt that I should help and show him the technology I'm doing so they wouldn't be caught surprised by some East Bloc technology that would come over the horizon.
So you actually were at Los Alamos, huh?
No, I wasn't there. They came up here.
And
They secured some property. And we were working together for about 4 months. The company I was with at that time, Ferris Technologies, wanted on Canadian soil, so the American government and that, they agreed to it.
And one of the you at Liberty? Oh, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I'm at Liberty, and Colonel Alexander appears on TLC and Discovery with me once in a while, talking about all this stuff. So I'm at Liberty to talk. They don't care.
No kidding. So, I mean, you said you were with, you know, you worked in the military industrial complex, and were there things, I'm sure there must have been things you saw that you probably weren't terribly impressed with, applications of technology that probably weren't some of the best you've ever seen. Is there anything like that that you saw that struck you particularly?
Well, they call it the war, the theater of war and all that stuff, and they use these kind of, for the war fighters, these kind of weapons and stuff. Mostly it's just pure science and how to develop these kind of unique beamed weapons, pulse weapons. Also beam power systems and pulsed ion engine drives. All kinds of unique things. I've seen some of the stuff when I was down in Nevada State University visiting Dr. Elizabeth Ann Rauscher. And she took me into the sub-basement, and I saw these ion cannons. They're big things, and they're actually quite impressive and extremely well-made. And she said she'll give me a demonstration of it next time I'm in the area, but I never got a chance to see it. So she's now in Apache Junction working away on things, and I was kind of redrafted into a group that was back engineering alien spacecraft.
Really? This is very interesting. Okay, we'll pick up there when we get back. We get a short break. Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back with John Hutchinson. Welcome back to Truth Hurts Radio. It's your host, Charles Giuliani. We've got John Hutchinson on as our guest today. Very interesting stuff. So before the break, you were talking about UFO research. Were they trying to create a saucer, a flying saucer? Is that what you were saying?
Well, they were back engineering alien technologies. And the project manager, well, he's kind of a notorious character himself, Gordon Novel, his name is, and we worked together, and what I did was produce for them, through their schematics and bits of information they had, the best companies that possibly could supply the parts and pieces and that with, for them to develop it. And what I found out is that, as this progressed on, mostly down in Scottsdale, I actually met Gordon a few times. And he's quite a character, a real character. And he's got quite a team of 50 people. Such names as Mark Bush, Colonel Alexander, Pandolfi, Linda Moulton Howe as an observer, and on and on and on it goes. And I was designated as chief engineer on that thing for a while.
No kidding. Wow, yeah. That's quite a resume.
Well, yeah, well, Dr. Rauscher was, too, until she said, well, she said to me, she said, Gordon never brings his checkbook, so she dropped out of the program. But I supplied this since the October prior to this, the information for Gordon to go and get all these unique pieces of equipment and companies that could help him put this thing together. Yeah, Gordon, I don't know, we just kept on going on this, and after a while, we had a shouting match, which was interesting. And he says, well, John, you don't want to ever mess with me. I got these lawyers and all that. I said, yeah, I know. I know you got the lawyers and all that. I said, I'll call in all the news media and I'll have a field day with that stuff if you want to go that way. I don't care what you do. So we just kind of dropped off, and then he got upset over $1,500 he gave me for my time and that, and it was kind of hilarious, because what I did with his email, I blasted him back and I said, well, Gordon, blah, 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 you know, it's a lot of time was put in this. And then he retorted by saying, and I also gave you $500 extra to come out to the West Coast and meet Paris Hilton. I said, wow, okay, well, whatever. It just went into a very strange situation. And then his investors were phoning me and talking to me, and the scientists were also calling me and saying, well, if Gordon completes this thing, it's going to be about 8 tons. So take him lightly, kind of thing. So I thought, okay. So that's, unfortunately, Gordon got into screaming matches with everybody, and haven't really heard much back from him. Because when I got back to here from Scottsdale, I started to send him emails about a lab that's for sale in the interior of British Columbia that has all this high voltage stuff that would probably help him out a bit, and I don't think the guy's asking too much for it. But that's just one adventure. And
now, why would he think you'd want to meet Paris Hilton? I mean, did you just like you get funding, or did he just think that would be the highlight of your life? I mean,
well, no, she was a forum member on the old Hutchinson Effect Online.
Oh, really?
Website. She joined that for a while, and that broke down, the whole forum broke down to there was no administration to it. Nobody could admit it, and the fellow that owned it from Toronto was somewhere else and wasn't even aware of the problem. So big problem there. So I saved a lot of her posts and put them on my blogger and other folks that were there, like Cynthia and other people that were posting in the forum. I just, what you do is copy and paste the information and put it into a blog site. So people started picking up on that. And then my producer in Hollywood, who wants to get me on doing my Fox TV Network TV show, 22 episodes, called the Hutchison Effect TV series, he knows Paris Hilton. He says, well, I'll just contact her. She can do an intro on the show kind of thing. So then this goes on and on and on like that. So I said, well, whatever, you know, it's kind of cool, I guess. I don't know if people see that. I'll just leave it to, I'll basically leave it to those guys. They're doing it, I'm not. So I always leave it to the producer or the news media people to do whatever they think is best for a good show. But that's how that came about. And Jordan thought, well, I don't think he knew her, and he claimed to know Linda Gray and all this stuff. And Gordon was kind of getting far out there, in my opinion. But back to reality, this whole alien reverse technology, it seemed like Gordon was trying to get even with Area 51 and the CIA government.
Now, have you ever been there or had any contacts with people that have worked there? Or?
CIA?
Well, yeah, forget them guys. No, I mean like Area 51 or...
No, just a friend of mine, Nick Cook of James Defense Weekly, he was making contacts. I met him in 1998. He then produced that the billion dollar question, I believe it was called, for TLC. And then he wrote a book called The Hunt for Zero Point by Nick Cook. And he featured me in the back part of the book, because they gave him a lot of information that I acquired during the 1980s on the Star Wars program and Black Ops information stuff. So he followed up on that and then got this book published, which is still selling around. And he met Boyd Bushman, who had some very unique ideas in anti-gravity and was a supporter of my work, of Lockheed Martin Skunk Works.
Yeah, when we come back, I want to talk, you know, in depth about your anti-gravity, you know, your Hutchinson effect, and get your opinion on some other things. So stick with us, folks, on the short break, and we'll be right back with John Hutchinson. Okay, guys, we're back on Truth Hurts Radio. We've got John Hutchinson on as our guest today from Canada. He's a scientist slash inventor, discoverer. You know, I might as well ask you, since this was brought up before the break, were you ever approached by the CIA and asked to do any work for them? I know they've done a lot of experimenting in electromagnetics and...
Well, yes, actually I have, and also the Canadian government's Deputy Prime Minister Eric Nielsen and his team, Dr. Lauren Kuhn of DSTI, Directorship of Scientific Technical Intelligence Agency Canada, so... I have, and I declined on several contracts because I found that they were too restrictive and I couldn't really enjoy what I was doing, and I couldn't talk to the media or talk to anybody about what I was doing, so I declined on those offers. Any other offers? Japan made some offers, Germany made some offers, and...
Were any of the projects, or maybe it was compartmentalized so you wouldn't have even known, but did you sense any of these projects were less than wholesome? You know, was there anything like that involved?
No, not that I'm aware of. It was just general work.
Research and...
Yeah, the last kind of group of people was NASA's Lewis, the Kennedy Space Center people. They brought up my topic to the director, who said, no, we just got to go on our own, like our own path here. That was a friend of mine at NASA. And then the last contacts were, shouldn't mention his name, we're all friends. I mean, was the U.S. Pentagon's Air Force Division, Chief Procurement Officer for Advanced Projects and that. He sent me some emails, and I sent him a videotape of George Hathaway's lecture on what I'm doing, and he wanted me to possibly get funding from them through American Anti-Gravity, and I actually declined on it. I said, no, Timmy, I said to Timmy Ventura, I said, no, I don't, you know, it just, I like the media stuff, it pays well, It's a lot of fun, and it's not restrictive. I just felt if it got into this more and more with U.S. Pentagon, that I'd be kind of locked into a contract, and I wouldn't be able to do much or, again, go on talk shows like yours or do the TV shows that I'm always doing for Discovery and History.
Right.
But I think, you know, it's... I even had another person just recently made contact, and he said, well, if you give me a demonstration, I'd get money for it. And I replied back to him. I said, okay, that's fine, but what does it... How does it affect my freedom and that? What must I do kind of thing? Because they can offer me millions, but still, if it's going to... not be if it goes against what I feel and goes my health and that, well, no, I prefer to be running around the beach free.
I hear you. I hear you.
Constrictive stuff. I don't mind helping. I mean, the idea is for me, I give the stuff away anyway, and I don't mind sharing with government people at all. I said if I'm ever back east, the Navy Department said we'll give you a tour of the building. I don't mind that. I think it'd be cool.
Yeah.
Well,
so you must have seen some interesting things over the years.
I'm sorry?
You must have seen some interesting things over the years with all these contacts and...
Oh, yeah. It was always ongoing. I've had some unique adventures. My ex, Ian, she's a filmmaker, and I had to get some documents out of the CIA, and I did, actually. A lot of good stuff on UFOs, and she's doing a UFO documentary. And
wow.
I had to get a privacy coordinator. He was quite helpful, actually, and he said, I think I can go there. I should have gone there. I could brag that I was actually there, but I didn't go there. I took the lazy way out and just put in my $89.10 for several thousand documents, which some of them turned out okay. So that's involvement with the strange people.
So from what you've seen, would you agree that, you know, the government in general, U.S. or Canadian for that matter, and pretty much any government across the board, that they are privy to technologies that the general public is not privy to?
Oh, very, very much so. That's a very common thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have their own, every government has their own black ops kind of situation. A prime example is Area 51, where you're not even allowed to go near the place. That's one.
Obviously, they're involved in some high-tech experimentation there, huh?
From what I gather, it's anti-gravity. That's funded through SAIC down in San Diego. And they're actually, I'm told, they developed my technology and are working on it. And that I can't prove anything. I try and make contact. And they'll make brief mention, or they're kind of like... hesitant a little bit, but there's a lot of leaks that come out in emails or letters and phone messages and that kind of thing, so it's kind of intriguing.
I wonder if they've utilized any of your ideas? Or
I'm sure they have, really. I think they've probably implemented them and got them way ahead and out there. I mean, they use, like, for the stealth bomber, they use high voltage on the wings and that to give it extra lifting power.
Mm-hmm.
One unique thing they like doing with this stuff.
There's been a lot of speculation that some type of anti-gravity might have even been utilized by the ancients, you know, for building. I mean, I'm sure you're aware up in the Andes of Peru and Bolivia, they've got, there's that one city, Tiwanaku, that has stone blocks that are hundreds of tons each. And, you know, they were hauled up the mountainside from a quarry that's miles away up and over another mountain range, you know. So there's been a lot of speculation, you know, how do they do that? How do they raise them to that level, you know, up a mountain?
Well,
how do they move them at all?
Well, that, I agree with you. And one of the shows I was going to do with Beyond Productions down in Australia was on that topic, was a demonstration of making blocks move around like that, but they never came over yet, so that was a number of years ago. But I think that they probably had an ancient anti-gravity. Either it was acoustic or it was some kind of electromagnetics. Because I've been developing some of these projects that were ancient, like the Ark of the Covenant for Blue Book Films, and it actually did work and scared the heck out of all of us, really. And it was supposed to air on Discovery, but it hasn't aired yet. It's called Ark of the Covenant Revealed. And a few other projects I worked on was a micro version of the Philadelphia experiment, and I got some strange results just the other day, actually. I was doing that last year, too, and I got a red bow. Well, I should mention that red bow can that floated around. I was trying to make the ship disappear, but it didn't really disappear. It just got high voltage coming out of it all over the place. So, plus all the water was coming out of the container it was floating in. It's a miniature, a foot-long miniature ship. Of it's an Iowa-class warship. That's having fun with that experiment. So television people will contact me once in a while for these impossible things, and I like to do them. It's nothing, not impossible. It can be done.
Right, just got to use your noggin there. Mm-hmm. Tell me, what do you think of the this Coral Castle guy? You know that story down in Florida? This guy pretty much single-handedly built this massive coral structure for, what, his girlfriend? And he moved stones that, you know, weighed several tons each. And as the story goes, the only help he had was a friend that had a flatbed. And he would tell his friend to look the other way, and as soon as he would look back, he'd have the stone loaded on the back of the truck.
Intriguing stuff. I've been hearing about that for a while, and there's been talk about that he used radio waves to do this.
Yeah, and supposedly he was into Tesla as well.
It's highly probable he did. I noticed that he has a lot of, in the museum down there, I've seen pictures of it, he has a lot of unique pieces of equipment that I recognize in vacuum tube technology. And the other argument is that he's a brilliant engineer and knows how to use winches and all that to move these things very fast, which is possible.
Yeah.
I've moved a couple of tons by simple winches and that, but it's usually normally a slow process. And we had to do a 8-ton generator off the one of the warships down in the river down here, and that that took a while to do, but I mean,
apparently, according to his friend, I mean, it was just like a matter of a few seconds, you know, just turn your back and you'd have him turn around when it was loaded. If there's any truth to it, could be.
It's hard to tell. History tends to bury a lot of unique things in time and that, so you never know. I mean, it's all kinds.
Well, I know he had several. He had two doors, massive. I forget how many tons they weigh each, but he had them pivoted so precisely that a mere touch of the finger would open them.
Oh yeah, fine. I could really
kind of like.
Sorry.
I mean, the Egyptians did that with the Great Pyramid, you know. Apparently the door that they had originally on there opened the same way. Massive, multi-ton stone.
Well, if it's very precise engineering and bearings or even magnetic bearings, I see where that's possible, yes.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Really?
I mean, the guy, he was obviously innovative, whatever method he used. You know, he's got a lot of people mystified today. But let's talk about your Hutchinson effect, because that kind of goes along this line, doesn't it? It's basically, would you call it anti-gravity?
It's a unique form of anti-gravity. It doesn't require anything above or underneath the test sample. It's effective to samples away from the machinery, actually, up to about 300 feet. That was measured by Los Alamos National Laboratories, so I couldn't levitate. We've levitated all kinds of different things at in the range of about 12 to 15 feet and up to 1,500 pounds.
Wow.
That's all with very low energy. And
now, you know, on the videos, it looks like they're kind of just randomly shot up in the air. Have you been able to hover them and manipulate them while in midair? Is there, you know, any control?
Yeah, actually, we've done a lot of that stuff back in the 80s, too. I mean, I have many crates of video footage. And some of the footage that television people like to put out there or get into the, well, I guess it's on the Internet, is the cannonball and some other strange things. But I have all kinds of different other footage where you have something that's randomly flying around in circles. And most impressive, of course, is the metal floating around or breaking apart and disintegrating. But since last year, I have about maybe 20 hours of new footage. And I'm doing this on a smaller scale up here in Canada, these demonstrations. And just keep a camera right onto the target area. The heaviest thing, I think, What was the heaviest thing? It was maybe a couple of pounds on a levitator. But you got to be careful in this area here because the field goes into other people's apartments and across the street and that. So that causes a problem. Yeah. They go to the media, and the media comes to me or interviews them, and they're starting to get too much of a reputation. So every time I go outside, there's people saying, "Oh, hi, John, how you doing? Were you working your machines? Because the doors were opening and closing and things were moving around in our building."
So, I can see you sending the priest home. No, we don't need an exorcism here.
Yeah, kind of like that, or people coming around burning me at the stake, and other people complain they heard strange noises in the middle of the room, so they were going to come and talk to me about it. So I get those kind of situations when I walk outside. And because it is a residential area, and the apartment across the street, I believe, about it's about 12 stories, concrete.
Wow. Now, can you tell us what mechanism that it is? I mean, is it electromagnetics? Is it just magnetics? Or is this something?
It's It's basically RF frequencies and electrostatic frequencies.
And that's it, huh?
Well, no, not quite. It's a multitude of those different frequencies, all working in tandem together.
Are they all tuned to the same frequency and concentrated?
Multiple frequencies, starting from 450 kilohertz up to about 2 gigahertz, which is tunable. And so phase angles that I put this stuff at and amplitude, along with the electrostatics and high voltage pressures, which I use.
You know, that's fascinating because there are actual legends. I think there's one from South America, and then there's another one in the Mahabharata, which mentions moving things by the power of sound. Are you familiar with those?
I've been hearing about that, yes.
And that is interesting.
I did an experiment for Harry DeLighter Productions on actually using sound to move around a 7-pound barium titanate cylinder and other objects in the test area. It was a perfect demonstration because it was on demand. You could just turn it on and it would happen right away. Whereas
wow.
These experiments right now, they take about 10 minutes to start happening. I started doing this more here for when National Geographic TV and Film came in last year in February.
You could have some fun with that. Hey, do me a favor. Next time Bush gives a national address, can you get a pass in there and levitate him?
George Bush, levitate. I wonder, he might like it.
Yeah, he might like it.
You know him. He's kind of a character, isn't he?
That would be pretty funny. Almost as funny as when the bird pooped on him there in the White House lawn last summer. I don't know if you heard about that one.
No. He gets into more trouble then. George Bush, didn't he?
Yeah, he sure does.
I got some.
But this is fascinating. So you're using a combination of, would you call it ultrasonics, magnetism, and
no, not ultrasonics, but more of radio frequencies, multiples of radio frequencies.
Oh, so it's not sound per se that you're using then.
No, but I do other experiments like T. Downs and Brown's work with a direct high voltage wire connected to something, and I then did this other one that was replicatable with sound. That's the one maybe you're thinking of, or this TV group. It was simple barium titanate cylinders from Fair Radio Sales in Ohio, and a crown amplifier, and use actual feedback. And this cylinder itself would move around by itself, and all the objects in its range, or I'd say about a foot and a half, would move also.
Wow.
It's quite unique. And then going into the stone blocks and that, maybe they use something similar to that. It's ultrasonic.
Now, are there any precautions you have to take? Is there any danger to you? You mentioned other people. Yeah, you might shoot it, at them, but...
Well,
I guess as long as you're not in the range.
So far, so good. No accidents with to fetch wood and that with any of our teams and that over the years. I'm very careful with this stuff. I do a lot of shielding. But it's almost impossible to shield gravity waves. This is indeed gravity waves that's coming out of here.
So that's really what you can. So you think you've tapped into the graviton?
Well, of course, and time particles, because some of the samples I have seem to age in time. It was confirmed by the Max Planck Institute and also other scientific.
Wow, this is really getting interesting. A little over my head, but interesting nonetheless. I want to talk some about that when we get back. And we have a caller waiting too, so we'll take him when we get back. Stick with us, folks. Okay, guys, welcome back to Truth Earth Radio. It's your host, Charles Giuliani. We're joined by John Hutchinson today. Before we go to our guest, our caller, I wanted to ask you, because you touched on something very interesting, and of course this can open up a whole new avenue of discussion, but from what you're saying, you've tapped into, it seems like, the graviton with your anti-gravity. You're literally using what appears to be a negative force of gravity. So this kind of plays into the theory of everything, that gravity does have a repulsive side to it.
Oh, that's actually that's been proven through the research at Los Alamos too. In a way, through their antimatter experiments, they found that antimatter products that they manufacture, of course these are just micrograms in very small quantities, have anti-gravity properties.
Wow! So they actually have developed antimatter?
Oh yes, in the 1980s actually. I got a lot of their books on that and how they do it.
Now, how do they contain that? Because apparently antimatter is probably the most destructive force that man can even conceive, right?
Well, when they make it, it sounds like firecrackers going off in the labs. And how they contain it is through magnetic bottles.
Wow.
Their main...
I mean, so what did they do with it once... they don't play catch with it.
No, you don't. They were using it for a new possible energy source, but the cost of it to create it is, what was the figures in that time period? Like $1 million per microgram or something like that? The electrical bills to use the big cyclotrons and that to generate the particles needed. So their whole thing into anti-gravity back in the 80s, it was then I couldn't get access to the reports after that, but I have the information, though, from those particular times. And
I mean, is this stuff as powerful as what I've read? I mean, if they would open that bottle and unleash it, basically?
Oh, yeah, it's very extremely powerful. It's one, what is it, one milligram is equal to a space shuttle of energy to get it back and forth.
Wow.
I was reading in one of the handbooks.
Now, does it involve, radioactive release, or is it just simply explosive force?
Well, it's explosive force, but it would release X-rays and basically just X-rays. Pure annihilation, actually. That's what it is.
It just blows my mind that so much energy can be contained just within an atom. Now, is it specific atoms that contain, I guess, any atom, right, of any element?
Any element, any atomic element can be converted into antimatter. There's also another force of nature that is being tapped into right now, and that's zero-point energy, and there's been a patent already put out to Dr. Franklin Mead on a zero-point energy collector in 1996.
Or free energy, right, as it could be called?
That's what you would call it, yeah. It's but IBM has now the whole patent. Like the Geron Corp has all the patents on telomerase, the anti-aging enzyme.
So in a sense, you could say that every one of us has an unlimited amount of energy contained within us, basically.
Very much so. And that's quite true.
This is mind-blowing. Anyway, my head's spinning already. I don't know how you can do it. Let's go to Roger from Chicago. Welcome to the show, Roger.
Got a question for you.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, not for me. I don't know what we're doing here, but I'm sure John can help.
Actually, for John, just out of curiosity, have you? Most of your research has been from looking at the gravitational field by dumping energy into it. Have you actually decided or actually thought about doing the reverse, which would be actually receive energy from the graviton field and convert that back to energy?
I tell you what, Roger, I hate to do this to you, but we got another break. But hold there, and we'll pick that up when we get back. Stick with us.
Alrighty.
We've got John Hutchinson with us. Don't miss this. Very interesting stuff. All right, guys. Welcome back to Truth Earth Radio. Just trying to get in the holiday season here. That was Kermit, but he had to run. Miss Piggy called him. Anyway, we were in the middle of a question there, and then the break kind of cut us off. Did you get the question, John, or did you want Roger to repeat it?
Oh, I got the question, yes, and it's a very good question, because we had experiences where when we're doing an experiment, it was for the U.S. government guys, And we turned on the equipment, and what happened was that the equipment itself tended to amplify itself, meaning that everything was over voltage. And the odd part about this is that every time we turned on the equipment, this would increase. So Alex Pizarro, he went around to see if the mains were plugged into the proper circuits. I mean, it didn't seem to make sense why this incredible energy surge would happen. What we found out was that nothing was plugged into the walls at all, so there was some kind of thing that we tapped into. That, I said to Alex Pizarro, I said, I'm not turning this thing on again. Let's leave the building. Guys, let's get out of here, because if this thing goes off, it could take out the whole building. So we just took off, and oddly enough, this kind of happened before with, I don't know how, we luckily got on camera on Super 8 millimeter film. It was a dimension that opened up, and all this strange multicolored things started to form around us, and we were lucky to get it on camera. So to answer the question, I think we have done that. I mean, okay. We got into the samples seemed to tell a story afterwards, too, that...
Was this release dangerous, do you think, or radioactive?
I think not radioactive, no. I think it was dangerous in a way that whatever was going on in there at that time, it was, most advisable to leave the area until this thing would somehow settle down to its normal ground state, which it did do, luckily. Because I got a little nervous to Pizarro. I said, no, I don't want to switch this back on again. Every time we switch it on, it just seems amplified. You can see the coils starting to bulge, which didn't make sense to me. And I said, this is very bad stuff. So it's a very interesting question that was presented by the caller there that many times we've had strange things happen that were considered very dangerous or unusual.
I don't know if you're still listening.
Oh, okay.
The other question is that have you ever thought about building a receiver that could actually just small, minute amounts reverse that to actual energy?
Well, we're tapping into the main, also this graviton force, or even time particles, I'd even include those and other particles, but also zero-point energy. So the energy levels are incredible. I mean, we did a newscast in 1985 using only 75 watts of power to run the entire laboratory. And we're able to lift chunks of foam and some metal, and it was put on the Canadian National News. How that happened was that the news gentleman actually closed the door on the extension cord and broke it right in half, and it closed the entire lab down. So,
oh jeez.
So that was proof positive. As Alan Edwards, he's still in production actually, doing video production.
But when you lift these heavy objects, you have been able to keep hold them steady, huh? I mean, it's not kind of like in your video, it looks like these things are kind of just randomly flying up in the air, but you have been able to hold them steady?
We have what they call hovering effects.
So in other words, there is practical application to this.
Oh, very much so. It was presented to the military industrial complex, and McDonnell Douglas Aerospace, who worked on it with me for a short bit, they wanted to put it in applications.
Wow. I tell you what, we got to go another break, but stay with us, folks. Roger, you're welcome to stay, too, if you want, after the break. We'll be right back, folks. Welcome back to Truth Hurts Radio. Joined today by inventor, scientist, John Hutchinson. Is that how you refer to yourself, by the way? You certainly come into that category.
Well, I'd like to... No, I don't call myself anything, really. I call to... You want to hear the truth?
Sure.
I just tell everybody I'm a hobbit.
There you go. Just a curious person, right?
Exactly. I mean, that's what I am. Also, I do, engineering, basically.
Before we go on, I want to have you do this again later in the show, but give out your website and anything else you want to plug so people can go read up more about you.
For sure. I have a blogger site. It's HTTP. JohnKHutchison.blogspot.com. And my website is www.hutchisoneffect.ca.
And let me ask you, what's the strangest thing? I'm sure there's been an instance where you got results you never expected, and you have no idea what caused them, and probably
never will, has, you know, anything like that you want to share with us? You know, something happened, you just had no idea. Where did that come from? What caused that?
Many times we've had such things as entities appear out of, well, the Ark of the Covenant, for one. When we did it for Blue Book Films for Discovery Channel Networks, there was these entities that came out, and my girlfriend at the time was telling Rudy to film, and he did. Other times, doing the experiments, I was surrounded by this green, pulsating green type of light with a central spine thing, and I thought I was hallucinating or going nuts. Other situations, we had an entire building vanish. It's just like,
no.
What's next?
Come on.
No, no, can I
get it?
No, it was documented, actually, in Vancouver.
Come on. Well, I hope there weren't people in there.
Actually, we were in there. We didn't even
know
what happened, because the people outside knew what was happening, and they were telling everybody else about it. And also, the person that was to visit us that day was an insurance company. So, I mean, if you report it to the news, the news people will think you're, well, what kind of LSD are you taking? You know,
has David Copperfield ever hooked up with you? Remember, he made the Statue of Liberty supposedly disappear.
No, I haven't. I'm not. No, I don't know him. I know Uri Geller. He's a friend of mine, but I don't know.
No, I imagine that you didn't make the building come back, right? I mean, it literally was gone.
Oh, it came back. Of course.
Oh, it did.
Back. Yeah.
So, I mean, was it just a visual thing or physical, or can you tell?
We inside could not tell. It was another group from Boeing Aerospace Corporation. It was Alec, myself, George Lissacase, and then the people outside. We're in a very heavy, actually, oddly enough, and it's good, too, that it was a heavily populated area.
This is freaky.
And the building next to us was the 88 food market, so there's people all around it.
How would you claim that on your insurance?
Well, the insurance guy did show up, and that's when the building vanished, and he was really angry. He wouldn't come back to insure the laboratory.
Wow.
I don't know what kind of game you guys are playing, but I'm not coming back. Now, this was told to me by George Lissacase, who was the other group I was working with. And so that's some of the strange things that happened, also things that happened like these cloudy, misty, red things would come up out of the ground and disappear through the ceiling, and Alec would be there with his camera, and we used to get nicknames for all these kind of crazy things that he started calling him. Carl would appear and disappear, and then we'd have nails that would float through the wood and come out pouring down the other side of the walls, and he'd take photos. Alec would take photos. He's from Estonia, so this kind of stuff to him is kind of like, well, I've seen this stuff before in Russia, so, but we had a lot of high adventure like that, I guess, and
that is
I kind of just say, well, something I don't understand, but it's kind of intriguing, but it's good to get it filmed and documented. Except Donald Douglas Corporation tends to do a lot of that, and they filmed a lot of that happening.
The truth is stranger than fiction. It's a weird, bizarre world out there.
I think the main thing in all of this, you got to get credible scientists that will document it for you, and that's what I did over the years.
We got a caller on the line. Before I go to him, I'll share my bizarre experiment last night.
Fire away, sir. Good heavens, what did you do?
I wasn't intending to experiment. It was weird. I was talking on the mic and in a chat room, and I've got some magnets I keep by my computer. I toy with them, you know, for stress relief or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I moved the magnet near the screen, and it started going funky on me. I'm like, what the heck is it? So I put it right up to the screen, and it made a pattern like what you would get when you get those filings on the paper, and you put the magnet underneath, and it forms into the shape of the filings form the shape of the magnetic field. It was doing that on my computer screen. I'm like, whoa! And then what was really scary is it wouldn't go away. I had to I finally turned the screen off, and when I put it back on, it was gone. You know,
yeah,
but it made this. It was like a tie-dye shirt pattern. What's going on with that?
You're bending the electrons in there, and you also partially magnetize the shadow mask in there.
So I didn't do any permanent damage?
No, it should go away. You have a degaussing system in there?
Well, I just turned it off, turned it back on, and then it was fine.
You missed me. You got rid of the residual magnetics in there, but I used to do that all the time. I wrecked a few TV sets halfway with those super.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Don't try this at home, folks. But, hey, I'll tell you, if you have an old screen, though, if anyone wants to try it, it's pretty wild looking. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, it's a lot of fun, especially with black and white. You get a big black hole in the center of the screen.
Well, this was like a rainbow thing, and it was just bizarre. I'm like, whoa, that is weird. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, the electrons inside, I guess, arranged themselves according to the shape of the magnetic field, apparently, right? Because it had that kind of magnetic field looking spirally, just really weird.
Basically,
anyway,
yes.
Yeah. I tell you, science blows my mind. I don't understand a thing about it, but it just intrigues me anyway. I tell you what, we got another caller. My buddy Esoterics is the name he goes by. That's his username on paltalk.com. Esoterics from Florida. Welcome to the show, Esso.
Good afternoon, Charlie. Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon.
I have a question for John, and this may seemingly be unrelated, but I'm going to tie it in. My question, John, is, are you aware of the New World Order global agenda?
Actually, yes, I am. I've been hearing a lot about that as far as taking our supplements away, taking our guns away, and all that stuff.
Yeah,
okay, well, the reason why I'm asking you that question is there are some private organizations like Stephen Greer's Arrow, which is Advanced Energy Research Organization, and Tom Bearden's crew that are working on developing free energy technologies.
Yes, I'm good friends with Tom Bearden. I've known him since the early 80s, and I know Dr. Greer, and I have a representative of him here filming last year.
Okay, well, are you planning on doing any work with either of those groups?
Thomas is, I'm just a little concerned about his health. I have a friend looking after him a little bit, Electra Briggs in Texas. And I respect Tom's work. I have his stuff out of the Department of Defense that I got out by just sneaky way of doing it. And Dr. Greer, I'm in contact with one of his representatives all the time in Vancouver here, Harold Bernhardt. And we're good friends, so we're doing A-okay on that area.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that, because we need some guys like you working for the White Hats or working with the White Hats instead of these black ops projects where they're developing technologies that they're never going to let us have access to, that they're going to turn around and use against us at some future date, I suspect.
Well, they're pretty advanced in that area of black ops. They've got stuff there that is mind-boggling, and hopefully they'll not do that. They'll just give it over to the citizens. And you know, it's this new world order thing. It's kind of strange because they want to take our vitamins away and our firearms and other things, and
right,
chip us all. And it's like, what's wrong with these people?
And these are the ones that are hoarding a lot of advanced technological discoveries in their own hands. That's pretty scary.
Well, yeah, even into like the Geron Corporation. I don't know if they're a new world order gang, but they capitalized on the anti-aging enzyme telomerase. They have everything covered on. So now if you want to get into anti-aging, you have to go and join their club.
And the immortality thing.
Yeah, the immortality thing. It's well, through vitamins and that, you can... That's what I'm on, is life extension. It's just vitamins, and it was started by Dirk Pearson and Sandy Shaw. Inspired me in that when their book came out in the 80s. It's good to keep in good health and... Well,
apparently, the only thing causing us to age is a gene. They say that the human body is designed for perpetual function. There's no need for it to break down.
That's right. And that's when, in 1997, they found the enzyme responsible for the main mechanism of that was telomerase. So Geron Corporation jumped on all of that really quick.
So Rockefeller might be actually in his 190s instead of 90s.
Oh, you mean Lawrence?
Yeah, well, David, yeah, I guess Lawrence is up there too, though.
Lawrence used to fund a lot of this alternative energy stuff, but he passed away, unfortunately.
Oh, he did. Okay, I know David is in his 90s. I think he's pretty much near. You know, I wanted to ask you, since we're on this subject, are you still there, Esoterics? Did you have any?
Yes, I'm here.
I just wanted to ask you, you know, since Esoterics brought this up, what you thought about, are you familiar with HARP, you know, the High Altitude Auroral Research Project, high frequency up in Alaska?
Very and much so. My adopted sister, Jean Manning, she and her friend Nick Bagich, they discovered that and presented it into the media. They're the ones that made it, and I've got some of the engineering diagrams of that thing laying around here somewhere.
What do you think about its application? its applications, like the weather modification? You think that's being used in that direction, or?
Well, I know they run tests once in a while, and they did reverse the ionic bonds up there in the ionosphere, and ham radio people could talk around the world, but they said, I don't think it's a good idea. And it has a
multiple applications.
Very dangerous situation where it could actually touch the Van Allen belts and cause a Ben Franklin effect, where you have that coming down to the Earth.
Right. Did you want to hold on till after break, Esso?
Sure.
Okay, great. Stick with us, folks. Be right back. Okay, guys, we're back on Two Thirds Radio. Our guest today is John Hutchinson. And we've got our buddy Esoterics on the line in Florida. Before we go back to him, though, somebody sent me a question in text here through paltalk.com, and I'm not sure I understand the question myself. Hopefully, John, this will make sense to you. But he's asking, he wanted me to ask you, since the graviton is quite powerful, wouldn't tuning the frequency a little off the center of the wave decrease the received power of the graviton? Does that make sense?
Yeah, actually it does in a way. Yes, it does make sense. I haven't explored that area, and the new science now is, quantum physics and what we think sometimes can go into other dimensions, and this has been on Discovery Channel. But a very good question, and something I'm entertaining, is that, basically, like it's, you find these kind of tuning adjustments on spectrum analyzers and that too, so it's a very, very, very interesting question. I like this guy with the gravitons. I find it hard to find graviton support people, so.
Now, would you say that there definitely is a thing called a gravitational field, and is it something that you've been able to measure to any degree?
Oh, we tried measuring it, and we found that this field is like a circular cylinder with an unknown height, and it seems to nullify gravity pull from the Earth.
Does it mimic at all the magnetic field shape, or?
Not really. No. It's extremely long waveform, and it seems to project itself at extreme distances. But
gravity waves seem obviously in a class by themselves. We don't have anything yet that we can, you know, measure like we do radio waves or.
Well, actually, there was an experiment done in the 80s where they made a gravity antenna, and it was a circular cylinder of aluminium. It was about, I think, 12 feet long and 6 feet in diameter, and they put crystal blocks all around it and over it, and they actually could detect the waveforms that would come in from space. But don't forget that gravity is basically a product of the atom. So when you condense down and get rid of, let's say, electron, protons, and a lot of other things, you get into neutron material. Well, the weight of that is so strong that it'll just go down and hit the center of the Earth. And then if you go beyond that, you get into a black hole. And a black hole, of course, is everything just goes in and into it and just comes out somewhere.
Nothing comes.
Other dimensions.
You get that wormhole thing and, other dimensions. And
I did a.
Wild stuff. That's when buildings start disappearing.
Things disappear, or the Bermuda Triangle, which I did a show with Motion Picture Productions about a year ago. It's airing on History Channel called Earth's Black Holes. I did a long interview for them here, and we did some demonstrations and things like that. So,
hey, if you ever come up with a disappearing gun, I'll be your first customer. I can think of some people right now I'd like to...
Disappearing handgun?
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, my God.
That would come in handy. Anyway, what's that?
I said, oh, my goodness. I'm sure the local constabulary wouldn't like that too much, but...
Yeah, right. I'll make them disappear, too.
Good.
Anyway, Esoterics, did you have any more questions? We actually got another caller that just came in.
Nope, I'm going to drop off. You go ahead and take your next caller.
Okay, thanks a lot. Thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
Let's go to Jerry in South Carolina. Welcome to the show, Jerry.
Hello. Hello to you and your guest today.
Welcome.
I'm just wondering, has your guest ever talked with Stan Deo? Because he's done some work along that lines also. Have you ever heard of an individual by the name of Stan Deo?
Name did you hear that, John?
Yeah, actually the name sounds familiar.
worked with so many different folks over the years, I don't know.
I can barely hear you. It sounds like you're a million miles away.
He can't recall. He's heard the name, but he's not sure if...
Okay.
I'm not sure if I worked with him, but...
Right now, I'm looking at the computer. There's a gentleman's name. His first name is spelled A-R-I-E, last name DeGeus, D-E-G-E-U-S. I'm not sure of the correct pronunciation, but it says here they found him deceased at the Charlotte-Mecklenburg airport. He was heading out to get major funding in Europe for his invention. Evidently, he was, I'm going to read this verbatim, he was the inventor of a thin wafer-like material device that somehow specially aligned the atoms or electron currents ongoing in that material so that the wafer produced a constant amperage at a small voltage, continuous real power, or in other words, a strange kind of self-powering battery. Evidently it was some sort of a battery he had created that didn't need any charging from any other source. And unfortunately, they say this fellow, they found him at the airport.
Hey, John, you think you can come up with something to help his phone stop doing that buzz?
The buzz sound, the AC hum ripple, maybe. the caller was mentioning that gentleman, and that made a bit of news a few days ago in the group.
Charles, can you tell me what he's saying? I can't hear him.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to let him finish. Go ahead, John, go ahead.
Yes, I am very familiar with the gentleman because it made some news a little while ago, and I'm also have been making for a long time basically the same product and been selling it to Japan, and also I just sent a bunch of samples over to Germany for testing.
Okay, we got to go to a break. Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back. Okay, guys. Welcome back to Truth Earth Radio. It's your host, Charles Giuliani. We've got... John Hutchinson on as a guest. This is fascinating stuff. I mean, 2 hours isn't enough time. I could talk to you for the next 10 hours. I got so many questions and things I want to find out about. Yeah, what do you think of this, talking about generators, this supposed perpetual motion generator using powerful, I think they're cadmium magnets, using the repulsive power magnets to keep a wheel perpetually turning and generating electricity? Are you familiar with that? Or
I don't think so. Is it something that just came out?
Yeah, well, it's been out for a few years. They claim that, you know, it's pretty much a perpetual motion machine. Maybe every once in a while you'll have to replace a magnet here or there, but it's just the repulsive power of magnets that keep the thing constantly turning.
Oh, do you know
one magnet? No, I they're somewhere in the States, and they claim that the houses that have used this actually produce more electricity than what the single household can use, and that they're selling back the excess to the local electric company.
Well, I think that's kind of cool. I wish I knew some more information on that to actually maybe.
Yeah, you know, I'd have to look it up. I don't even recall the company now. I'd have to look it up again. But I saw a video on it. It looked pretty impressive.
Wow, I mean that's the way to go.
Yeah, it looked to me the closest I've seen to perpetual motion. Have you done anything with trying to get a perpetual motion?
Not in apparatus? Motion, not in motion really, but more for energy. I've made these batteries or crystal power cells, and they supply energy, just picking up the random quantum fluctuations of the Casimir force. Started making those in 1993. Took them off to Japan and demonstrated them in Japan, and it was covered by news media, which is good, and also trying to get them into production. But unfortunately, the last funder, he supplied me with a lot of funding to do some research, but he wanted to get back to traveling around the world, and he just sort of left it by the wayside. So the latest person to pick all this up has been just a couple of days ago, was this Dr. Ludwig, who went off to Germany with a number of samples I made for him. And because it has potential, it's actually ready for factory production. It can go into factory production right away.
Wow.
I did a contract.
How many actual patents do you yourself have?
Oh, I've got no patents, no. No, I'm not.
Oh, really?
No, I'm not interested in patents. I just want to get the stuff out there. And into production. This is good. That's something I want to do. And when I go onto this Fox TV show, I just give all this stuff away anyway. But as long as I make a small commission, I mean, that's cool. But I tried that route with patents. Everybody said you should have a patent and all that stuff. I said, no, how can you patent something that's in nature anyway? So
right. I hear you.
So
that's great.
These things would power small motors and that, and I demonstrated them at the 50th anniversary of the bombing Hiroshima, and they worked quite well, and made maybe several hundred of them. And the other group was in Canada. They're supposed to get $5 million for funding to go into production on this stuff from the Canadian Environment Protection Agency. It was through the Planetary Association for Clean Energy, and they never got their funding, so kind of dropped by the wayside until this Dr. Ludwig showed up and won some samples. There was a Swiss group prior to him that showed up and won some samples too, and they gave me $1,000 to acquire materials and from a time, of course. And so they're off for testing, and I'm just saying to people that hey, this is a product, it's ready to go, take it to your factory, it'll go into production. It's as simple as making chocolate bars, really, and injection molding engineering. And out the other end, you can have a product that you don't have to make big claims on it, but you can sell for $19.95. Every kid on the block would want one. It's a toy item. That's the way I thought of getting the stuff out there, as a toy item, and then I guess large companies or other people could develop it into a more powerful source to power other things. So when 9/11 happened, I got a letter from a congressman, retired 914, I call it, and he was asking me how much would it cost to build a unit to power his house. So I said, well, it probably costs $5 million. It's going to be a Manhattan-style project. So he kind of opted out of that idea. But,
Wow.
I have another.
Have you ever had any calls from ExxonMobil saying lay off the alternative energy sources?
No, none of those guys ever phone. I actually had the Studebaker Motor Company send me an email and call me saying they'd like to cooperate with me, and because the gas prices are high and that, and what potential do these power cells have? We talked for maybe a couple hours in Scottsdale, Arizona. This is after one of my shows there on TV. It was Beyond Invention, it's called. And people can Google search out Beyond Invention and see what mischievous activities I'm up to. But he was quite impressed with what I was showing, and he wanted to do some business. But I get calls like that. People get excited, and they just sort of get sidetracked into other projects with demands of work and that, I suppose. So it was a Studebaker Motor Company that wanted to implement these power cells. CEO.
Wow.
Maintain.
Hey, you know, coming back to the Japanese you just mentioned, have you seen that latest video? I think it's Toyota that has produced it. They got a robot now that can play the violin and sign its name, and that's pretty impressive.
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's precision.
Cool.
It was really neat.
Oh, they got the unique things over there.
Yeah, they really do.
I love
it. Incredible.
That's
a shame.
Where could you see this? Is there a video on it or information on the robot?
Yeah, it just came out the other day. If you Google it, just put Japanese Toyota robot and violin. Put violin in the search, and you'll see it. It's a maybe 5-minute video showing some of their latest developments, and quite a bit of it was dedicated to that. It was amazing. It signed its name. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It didn't print it. It signed it, And then it held the plaque up with the paper on it, so you could see, like it was showing you. See what I did? That's unbelievable.
Oh, almost, I love it.
Almost scary.
I do a number of shows for Japanese NTV, Nippon Television, and on levitation and that kind of thing. So, yeah, Japan's a lot of fun. Once you get into the role over there, it's nonstop, and you go from one town to another city and whatever, and then give your presentation. It's a lot of fun. I was with Dr. Brian O'Leary on one of my adventures, and also with my ex, Ian, on the other adventure. The 2 years of adventures in Japan, that was pretty fun.
While we're on the subject of them, too, something else that fascinated me, and I've never heard anything more about it, but in 2003, USA Today covered this. They produced what you would call an invisibility cloak. Of course, it wasn't entirely invisible. It had a green tint to it, but it showed a University of Tokyo student trying it out, and you can literally, quote, see through him. What it actually does is the material is made of, you know, small lenses that gather light from behind the subject and project them forward. So it looks like you're seeing through him, but it's amazing. It looked like something out of Harry Potter. Have you heard of that? That's pretty
wild. Yeah, actually, I have. It was I heard of that a while ago for when I was doing a show on the BBC as a guest there. Gillian Anderson's Future Fantastic. She's doing a TV show over there. Really good guests like Dr. Robert Ford, Frank Close, and many others. And they presented that particular aspect that they were working on the invisibility screen where the lenses were a little bit bigger than that, but they would take the background behind the person and bring it around in front of him, so he would appear actually invisible. You could see a bit of an outline, but it was pretty impressive work.
Wild. And of course, the military now was all over this. They want to use it for, you know, bombers and, oh, jeez. I wanted to get into some of your other inventions. I hope we have time. We're running out, but we got two callers. Let me go to those quick, and then I'm hoping to ask you about some of your other stuff that you've done, videos I've seen that are just absolutely mind-boggling. But let's go to Harry. Let's go to Sal. I got Harry Potter on the mind. Sal in New York. Welcome
New York.
To the show, Sal.
Thank you very much. You mentioned about the electricity with the magnets. The website that I know of is myfavoriteclub.com.
Oh, okay. And it has a generator?
Yeah, it's a generator with permanent magnets that will create electricity. And, yes, you produce enough that you can sell back. You can probably supply with one generator about 20 homes.
Okay, yeah, I saw that. It was fascinating.
That's cool. I'll check that out.
Okay, thanks a lot, Sal.
You're welcome.
Okay, let's go quick to Joseph in, I think that's Missouri, M.O.
Yes.
Welcome.
Good afternoon. I was wondering if the guest has heard about a device called a water generator by Steve Meyer out of Ohio.
Yes, actually, I believe I have.
Okay, I understand he has met his untimely demise.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think it was food poisoning in a restaurant. Is that a viable invention he has?
I know that the conversion of water into hydrogen, there are a lot of people working on that. Some people in Vancouver actually have modified spark plugs for cars, and they were, this is a couple of years ago, they were actually quite excited about it, and we're getting some interesting results, but I haven't heard any feedback or it hasn't made any media as yet for a while. I haven't seen anything in the in the news media.
I saw a piece on the internet about a guy in Florida who has a electrolysis machine that he uses mostly for gas welding.
Mm-hmm.
But he has done some tests on running his small car on that HHO. And I imagine the same type of device that Mr. Meyer has. And one other thing was EESTOR out of Houston, Texas. It's a ceramic capacitor.
Oh, those are fantastic things, yes.
Well, I understand that they're supposed to be supplying a power module to a low-powered vehicle manufacturer in Canada, but they're a little late on production.
Ah, like a lot of these products, exotic things like that, and like Maxwell Power Capacitor, UltraCaps are actually manufactured not too far from here.
Yeah, I've seen some of those patents going back to 1888. Have you done any research on that?
I've done a bit of research on these things, and I find that a lot of these things indeed go back to that time period, like different time periods, of course, but turn of the century, some years ago, that's half a century ago, take the work of T. Henry Moray. That was actually fascinating work with his version of transistors and what they could collect in energy in that, too. That's one of my interests is following some of his work and replicating a little bit of that, which I did do back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And found that it did put out power.
You know, these two devices I mentioned seem like it was quite interesting, especially since you don't have to have a major modification to your, especially in the gas realm, you wouldn't have to modification the engines to run that HHO.
Yeah, no, I know there's a lot of people working on that. Not in the media, really. They're kind of being kind of protective about it, but nevertheless, it's quite interesting what they're doing.
Yes. Well, hopefully we can see something on the market.
That'd be kind of cool.
Yes, it would. Okay, thank you for your time.
Hey, thanks for the call, Joseph.
You're welcome. Bye.
Okay, in the last, we got a few more minutes. We're going to have a short break, and then we'll just have a couple more minutes left of the show. Time is really running by. But in these last few minutes, I wanted to ask you about some more of your inventions. You've done quite a bit of work in a lot of different areas over the years. One of them that I noticed, I think this was you. Wasn't you that developed that ultra-thin armor, protection armor for the military?
My friend Patrick Walker, who is in special ops, he told me all about that, and they're sitting on it, and they won't give it to the troops.
Oh, but you weren't involved in that? I thought that was something that you had worked on.
No, that was brought to my attention by my friend in North Carolina.
and they turned it down.
They're sitting on it. They won't give it to the troops.
And oh, so they wanted it, but they're not utilizing it.
So, well, it's just a matter, they have it. They actually have it, and they can supply it to the Army, but they're not. And our troops are getting knocked down by bullets from stuff that's disintegrating, old protective armor.
I guess they'd rather spend $60 on a six-pack of Coke for Halliburton.
Probably. They shouldn't be sitting on it. I mean, my friend wanted to go on radio and talk about it, and he's really ticked off because he's a good buddy of mine.
How about this discovery? Maybe I got that confused with you, too. I thought this was yours, but there was a device that you could, without using a projection screen, you pointed at a stone wall, and you can basically see through the wall using X-rays. Of course, you'd have to use a protective suit. Was that something that you had done?
No, that's one of my friends. He's done that. It's still in debate of exactly how accurate that is, but...
Okay, I don't know how I got this mixed up with you somehow. I don't know how that...
Well, maybe... Maybe part of the gang. I know the.
What other actual besides the Hutchinson effect and some of the other strange things you mentioned, buildings disappearing? What are some of the other specifics that you've worked on or even developed uniquely on your own?
Actually, prototype firearms, machine tools, chemistry, some chemical applications, and definitely into life extension. Oh man!
You've done work on that as well, huh? A life extension?
Yeah, I've been doing it since the 80s. I was inspired by Dirk Pearson and Sandy Shaw, and I got my own regime, and people ask for my recipe all the time. So that's an interest of mine. I like to keep in good health, and although I smoke cigarettes once in a while, but...
That's not going to help you.
No, that's not going to help me, but I take mega doses of stuff, and I have a lot of interest. I have very, very high interest in Navy ships. Meaning that when the Artificial Reef Society brings in a decommissioned ship, I go down there, I study every angle, and I take a lot of it apart. I work on the cannons, artillery sections, and radar and that. So it's to me like that. I don't ask for any money for that. I just go and volunteer. And there hasn't been a ship around for a number of years, but to me that is an amazing learning experience. About that kind of thing. So I must have been an old pirate in another life or whatever. I just have an interest in this kind of stuff. Anything military, I have to have it or study it or understand it. Commercial.
That's amazing, though, that you've never sought money for this or patents or anything. Boy, that's commendable.
No, that's not my angle. My angle's just being kind of free kind of character, and the money I like getting is from doing my entertainment stuff and pays well. I don't have any patents, and actually I told Robert Drake of Fox TV and the entire group, I just want to get this stuff out there and I'll show exactly how it works. I've actually been giving it away anyhow. I don't care anymore. I know that some people, I know what kind of people you're thinking of, they get really into patents and lawyers and all that boring stuff, and I'm not into that world. It's too boring.
Right, right.
Even thinking of a lawyer, I get to start yawning. So.
No, that's great. That's great. Just for the benefit of others, that's how it should be. Everybody's so greedy today. Yeah. Okay, we got that short break. Right. Stick with us, folks. Short break, and we'll be right back with John Hutchinson. Okay, guys. Welcome back to Two Thirds Radio. We've got just a few more minutes here left with our fascinating guest. Wish we had a few more hours, although he'd probably be falling asleep by then. But it's just fascinating stuff.
Absolutely not falling asleep. I've done 6 hour runs on shows.
Oh, have you really? Wow.
Oh, yeah. I was actually a co-host in one situation with Lou Gentile, and then I've done a number of like ones with Art Bell and others. I'd love to talk away, so no problem. I could go all day with you. You're a very energetic host.
Love to have you back. I mean, there's so much more to talk about. Hey, tell me, there's a strange phenomenon around me when I'm near delicious food. It seems to disappear. Are we looking at some scientific anomaly there, or is that just a bad eating habit?
Oh, good heavens, man. It's probably a better... It's like me and chocolate or cookies. It's the same thing with me.
Well, as long as buildings aren't disappearing around me, I guess that's not so bad. Wow, I bet I'd have a blast puttering around your lab. Of course, I'd probably be afraid to touch anything.
Well, Ludwig kind of did.
Yeah. So you got your own setup. You do most of your work right there out of your home?
Yeah, it's a converted apartment into an... you wouldn't believe if you were to see it. You wouldn't believe it. Nobody believes it. They see pictures of it on the internet, but when they come in here, they don't... They can't... It just bends their mind. The mayor of this city has been in here, and he said this is incredible. Kind of turned
it
into...
It sounds like a monster thing, you know, that I got lightning bolts over your house with a big cloud. And
this is not a house, sir. This is a apartment, would you believe it?
Oh, okay. Wow.
One bedroom stripped entirely and remodified like a ship. It's got a machine gun sitting in front of me right here. Believe it or not, a deck gun on the balcony. You really got to take a look at the internet and see what it looks like in here. I look around thinking, am I crazy or what sometimes when I come back from way in L.A. or...
I tell you what, I guess we have enough time to take one last caller. We've got Morgan in, oh boy, I know it's not Arizona. What is it?
Arkansas.
There we go. All right.
Hey, I wanted to ask your guest if he's seen David Copperfield's Levitation Act and to explain it to me. Thanks.
Yeah, I was mentioning that earlier too, David Copperfield.
Yeah, I don't know anything about it. I know that magicians have their own unique way of doing that stuff. I haven't figured it out yet, but I guess they use mirrors or something. I don't know. I have no idea.
I saw that show with the... I actually saw him live once, too. That was pretty impressive.
Well, my ex would know that kind of stuff. She was in the making feature films, and she would explain to me how they make things disappear or even buildings appear.
Can you make her disappear? That's why she's your ex now?
No. We're still good friends. She just wanted to... She kind of got tired of Hollywood, and she wanted to move to India, so she moved there, and I didn't follow, but... Yeah, she's... I date a lot of women, so... she's okay over there, and I'm over here, and I got married, I got divorced, that's another story for another time, but...
You know, they say marriage is the leading cause of divorce. That's what I hear.
Well, you're probably right. This didn't work too well. She wanted to try and control me, and that doesn't work well. So she's a very nice lady, very spiritual lady. But,
well, if it's on peaceful terms, that's good.
Pursued to somebody that would kind of not try and control me and dress me funny.
There you go.
I'm sorry that's about good. To say that, but oh well. What can I say?
That's another show. Maybe we can do a show on that sometime. We'll have you back.
My pleasure, sir. Any topic you want, I'm game for it.
Hey, listen, I really appreciate you coming on. This is fascinating stuff. And yeah, definitely, I'll give you a call again sometime.
You're a very energetic host, sir, and I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you once again. Folks, great show again lined up for tomorrow. We'll see you then. Take care.